Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, pictures of me getting killed on the streets, and other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coaching with me, Jack!
Yay!
All sorts of kilt on the streets.
All of it.
So for those that don't know, and this has been a question on the Facebook page, but kilt on the streets is a inside joke to refer to anyone that's doing something that is against popular wisdom?
I don't know if it's popular wisdom.
Groupthink?
It depends on the groupthink, because I've been told that I would get kilt on the streets for, like, carrying...
Shooting competition.
Yeah, for, like, carrying competition guns or, like, doing any of that stuff. It's like, no matter who you are...
You get kilt on the streets.
You get kilt on the streets.
Well, as Chuck Haggard was telling me via text just the other day, he was carrying a Glock 43 for like a week or so because he was doing some low-vis stuff or whatever. He's like, yeah, I got kilt on the streets like five times. It was horrible. I'm like...
His mustache is worth a double-stack handgun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mess with the mustache. Hey, Jack, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night. And TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 night vision goggle to the IR Patrol thermal monocular and everything in between. TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC now with financing. Own or finance the night. Man, it's been a long time.
Thermidol.
Look at the pretty rabbits. It's been a long time since I've messed one of the live ads up, like, really bad.
A sign of things to come this week.
Oh, God. So, speaking of this week, we've got all sorts of interesting things. Maybe check out the Facebook page on Tuesday for something...
Hint, hint.
I think's going to be super cool. See, the problem is that unless you're listening live right now, I seriously doubt Melody's going to get the episode up tomorrow.
Time traveling.
anyway, we're doing a Facebook user question show tonight. Yes, it's that time of the week again, or month, where we... What, Jack?
I'm sorry.
Leave me alone. I haven't had enough caffeine. Ah, day drinking. It's that time of the month where we answer your questions live on air. And it's all sorts of live tonight because apparently I'm making all the mistakes. And that's always awesome. So, without further ado, you've got questions. I've got answers.
Do I have questions?
Well,
let's hope.
Users have questions.
Coming from Matt Boardman, do you have any suggestions for rifle drills? Any suggestions for medium range rifle shooting, like 250 to 500 yards?
Well, first off, I think your idea of medium range and my idea of medium range are two separate things.
No, I think he's about right.
Well, I can't shoot. I mean, I'm like really bad. So,
you can shoot to 200 yards, though. Oh, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, hell, I do that with a handgun.
Medium range is where you have to start thinking a little bit.
Well, so we need to have the conversation about, one, medium range for what context? Two, medium range for what rifle? Because for an AR, you know, a standard 16-inch AR, especially if you're using, like, a red dot, once you get out past four...
It's a touch sporty.
That's not a medium-range shot anymore. And actually, given most people's level of skill, I would say that's a long-range shot. And especially if we're looking at, like, a civilian context, and start breaking down like what ranges and engagements occur at and things like that. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. As far as shooting drills go, I really think the one that is most boring and still probably most overlooked is just up drills. You know, start at a low ready and do quick snaps.
Positional shooting. Like
positional shooting.
The Navy qual, I think, is probably a really good drill that you can run at any distance.
Well, I like, so depending on how many like shooting partners you have, I really like doing threat discrimination drills. And the best way to do that is if you've got, you know, so let's say you've got like a dot torture target or something like that, and you're at 7 yards or, you know, 10 yards or 5 yards, and you've got a dot torture target, and you've got two buddies. One of the buddies is a threat. One of the buddies is a no shoot. They both call out numbers at the same time. And you have to auditorily discriminate who's saying what. You need to still think of your offset. You need to do all sorts of different things. You need to pay attention. It's harder than it sounds.
I wasn't sure what you were saying at first. I was like, what are we doing with these two guys on the range?
Well, we don't like them very much, so one of them's going to know.
Excellent.
Go ahead.
I will say that past 150 yards, you need to go out and shoot that.
Yeah.
And like, one, just do it to do it. But two, you're going to learn so much about your rifle and about you that past 200 yards, it's a little weird, especially with your ammo.
Well, so here's the great thing, too. So, like, I threw a 1-4 variable optic on the Daniel Defense V7 that I've been shooting a lot, and I zeroed it at 50, you know, because Fisher tells me I'm a loser if I don't zero at 50. And
you don't want to be called a loser.
Well, I'm fine with Fisher calling me a loser because, one, it's true, and Fisher calls everyone a loser, number two. But so anyway, I usually play with 100-meter zeros, whatever. Zeroed at 50. I'm out in Troy, Ohio. When was that, last weekend or the weekend before?
It was the weekend before.
Okay. So anyway, at the range that we taught the armed parent class at, Melody Lauer and I, and they've got like 225 yards. I'm like, cool. And we got there the night before, and we're just messing around. And they're like, here, shoot, you know, there's a gong right there. I'm like, you know, I take shots. I'm like, where are these bullets going? And I finally end up holding like 4 feet low, and then finally see the round impact in front of the target. I'm like, oh, I'm not zeroed at all. And I'm still not quite sure what happened there or whatever, but I went and fixed it and confirmed my zero at 200. And I'm just like, oh, you know, and I would have sworn that with a 15-meter zero, I'd have been close enough at 200 that I'd at least be hitting the target. Nowhere near. And I don't know if maybe I had an adjustment when I was putting scope coverage back on or if something shifted. But just goes to show, confirm your zero at the distance you're going to actually shoot at.
Well, I think that's actually an important skill to have, to be able to notice like when you're not getting an effect that you want and how to diagnose that problem on the fly.
Well, so the best part of that is like Melody's there and the two range hosts are there. And I'm, you know, I'm like, okay, what's going on? This, I'm looking really bad. And then when I finally got it zeroed, this is like a hanging gong. I'm like smacking this thing and it falls down. I'm like, great, I just shot the chain in front of
Now I've got to walk down there and fix this thing.
Yeah, I didn't shoot the chain. I just hit it so many times in a row that it came off the hook. But I thought for certain I had. We got to go to break in like 40 seconds, but we forgot to do it last show. One of our listeners with the NYPD was kind enough to overnight us the best donuts
so
in existence.
Good. I don't want to say if you would please send that again, but that was amazing, and I don't want to go to New York for them.
Yeah, it was really good. And I felt bad, too, because I'm like, he was asking me about it. He's like, listen, I'm like, listen to the show, bro. And then
we forgot.
Yeah, we forgot to
bring
it up. I blame
Melody. Let's blame Melody.
I actually blame Melody, too. She very much liked the donuts as well. But, wow, we only answered one question, and now it's time for the break. Hey, guess what? You're listening to Ballistic Radio! Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better! This segment brought to you by 6 Hour, now with more options. We're not all the same, and our carry gun shouldn't have to be either. 6 Hour gives you choices, and with more models than the Bible's got Psalms, it's never been easier to find a 6 Hour that fits your needs. From the extremely versatile striker-fired P320 with modular grip frame, to the Legion Series P226, the single-stack P225A1, or the entry-level SP2022, 6 Hour makes a model that's right for you. Just don't ask for Callahan Full Bore Auto Lock. They don't make that yet. 6 Hour, when it counts. And of all the ads that you would expect for me to mess up, that would be the one, because honestly, it's the most difficult for me to read. You just...
I figured if I held out there, you would stumble on something. Ah, so
you're so nice to me, Jack. So you reminded me of something, though you didn't mean to, but... So next week's your one-year anniversary of Ballistic Radio.
1 year of doing this.
Wow. What do you think?
It's been a ride. I actually had a friend remind me of it today by going like, wow, you've been a place for a year. Aren't you kind of a gypsy? I was like, oh, Twitch. Oh, no.
Great. Great. I have to look for a new Jack now. Oh, no. The Wanderlust. So anyway.
Found me.
You know what else is a ride? A helicopter when it catches on fire and then smashes in the ground. So thank you for using such an ambiguous term for... Anyway.
Helicopters are always crashing. Just it depends on what rate.
Right. All right. It's a Facebook user question, Joe, and we've got more questions or answers. Maybe both? Both?
Queries.
Queries.
Coming from Harry Rogers, what is the fact...
Oh,
stop.
God.
Stop. We got to make it through this. I haven't made an Anthony Weiner joke on air yet. We got to keep going.
Oh, this is going to turn into a political show really quick.
just a show on how to secure your laptop.
Oh.
What is the fascination with flat face triggers on 1911?
I'm just going to pause for a second. And I'm going to give everyone a bit of advice, and it's the same advice I give my son. Because I'll occasionally catch him doing something that like 7-year-olds do. And I'm like, I'm just going to tell people you do that. And he goes, why would you do that, Dad? And I'm like, here's the best advice I can give you, son. And this is advice I wish someone had given me. If you're doing something that you don't want other people to know about, you probably just shouldn't do it. So, and that's my hypocritical advice for the evening. But good
change
advice.
Your passwords frequently.
Yeah, right.
What is the fascination with flat face triggers on 1911s?
The fascination with them is that no matter where you get your finger on the face of the trigger, it's the same trigger pull each time. Whereas with other triggers, or with curved triggers or whatever, you can get different amounts of leverage if you're higher up, lower down, or whatever, and it changes the trigger press. That works well on a 1911. Here's where it becomes a problem. 1911 is a sliding trigger that the only movement on that is straight to the rear or straight forward, so it slides. When you try and get flat triggers on pivoting triggers, like on Glocks or, you know, SIGs or whatever, there's varying degrees of success with that depending on what kind of trigger shoe people use. You know, on Glocks, I prefer the SSVI tier trigger because of the shape of the trigger. It's a flattish trigger. It's not a completely flat one. It just works better for me. You know, and that's one of the reasons why on the SIG 320, I've played with the Apex trigger. I know a lot of people like it. I don't care for it that much. But the Grey Guns trigger that I have played with, I tend to prefer because when it breaks, it ends up at a 90-degree flat face as opposed to angled down. And you're, you know, and this is minutia and people get weird about it. But anyway... Backing up, that's the whole reason behind flat triggers on 1911s. When people start putting them on other things, I'm always kind of like, I want to play with this before I have an, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 1911s and ARs, they just work.
And see, I don't like them that much on ARs.
Oh, I do, man, I do.
I'm weird though, because like I like single stage triggers on ARs.
Oh, I could go either way. If it's a pure precision gun, I like a two-stage trigger.
Mm-hmm.
But it could go either way.
Yeah. Anyway, next question.
Coming from Ross Hick.
Now, you're going to have to vary this slightly, because if we get another Harry Rogers and you... Anyway, sorry.
Right. When loved ones ask you for advice on what to carry, how do you balance between the cost versus their use?
Well, so let's talk about something that Rob Pincus says, and it's one of the things that I actually agree with him on. There's not many, but this is one of them. And I actually, you know, I wish the industry would think of this a little bit more. But he makes a distinction between hobbyists and people interested in self-defense. What we, and I'm firmly putting myself in, you know, in this camp, what we tend to do is forget that this is our hobby. For the most part, I assume if you're listening to the show, you're probably a hobbyist to some degree or another. You like to shoot. Shooting is your hobby. It's something that you do for fun and addition to better preparing yourself for a violent encounter. So the amount of resources that we're willing to dedicate to our hobby is significantly higher than someone who doesn't see this as a hobby. If anything, this is an afterthought. So I think the line that we need to walk a little bit better is not completely off-putting people by, you know, overstating the cost in both money and in time to be pretty well prepared for this.
Yeah.
You know, you can spend, you know, $400 on a used Glock, spend $50 on, you know, a Raven concealment holster or one of the other good holster companies out there, and, you know, $50 on a good belt, and have a good, you know, carry setup for $500. You know, couple that with maybe a weekend class, and you're good for 99% of anything you're going to run into, probably. Now, that's not to say that spending more time on it is a bad idea, and I don't think it is, because if you're in that 1%, well, sucks to be you.
Yeah.
But given the number of people that, you know, successfully defend themselves with zero training and god-awful gear, I think it's disingenuous to look at this and go, well, you need to do X, Y, and Z to be safe. The issue is that the people that win with no training and bad gear win because the people they're, you know, fighting against have less training and worse gear, you know. And I don't think, like, sucking less than the other guy is a really good long-term survival plan, but... You know, it seems to work out for a lot of people. Backtracking to the original point of the question and what do we do? You know, I think that the first thing we can do is ask questions and get like, hey, realistically, how much time and how much money are you going to dedicate to this? You know, and based off of the answer that you get, then you go from there. And the stuff that I will suggest to people that say, oh, yeah, I'll spend a couple $1,000 on this and, you know, a couple hundred hours of my time is way different than the person that's like, I got $400.
Yeah.
I
mean, I remember when I first started doing this, I had someone ask me a question about it, and I gave my answer to it. And that person ended up just disregarding what I had to say and ended up making a foolish purchase and then later had to, you know, find a middle ground. And now I figure out what someone's into and I direct them towards the approach that will work best for them.
Yeah. You know, and that's the other thing too, is that we need to understand that we are not typical as far as this goes. Usually, I'm certainly not. Jack is certainly not.
I have friends that drive race cars.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are my perfect example. We don't all need to drive race cars, but we all do need to get to work.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a good analogy, Jack.
Hey.
All right. We got, well, here. Can you ask a question in the next 55 seconds? and then I'll completely ignore it during the break and then make you repeat it on air.
Rick Remington wants to know which gun-related cliche you would like to see die.
Oh, God. There's so many of them. The gun is a deterrent. That would actually be the number one cliche that I actually think is most harmful to people. What I mean by that is people that think because they have the gun is a magic talisman that will keep them safe from evil. And here, maybe when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about that and people can try and guess whether or not I'm speaking directly at open carry or a wider, broader audience. So how's that sound, Jack?
Sounds right about now.
You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. That bumper music. That's not the end.
I was
I swear.
Like, man, the show went fast.
You should take that out, Mario. You should just get rid of that.
Oh.
Just leave it for later. So anyway.
Moving on.
Apparently I've got the germs and I just found out.
Oh no. No, 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 no.
Someone's
no,
got 101.6 fever.
No, I've got to be stuck in a car with you for like 9 hours.
Oh, sucks to be you.
I'm
already sick and I don't even know it. I'm feeling kind of warm.
You feel warm on the other side of the studio.
Oh, I am wearing like a coat. And like... Anyway, Facebook user question show.
So we were, do we want to continue on that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Gun cliche that I wish would go away. The gun is a talisman. I made an analogy the other day and it was actually really good and it sounded like something that came from someone actually intelligent, but I swear to God, I originated it, as far as I know. So maybe I stole it via osmosis, but someone was talking about how having a gun was like an ace of spades and trumps all the other cards, and I'm like, no, having a gun's kind of like having a jack of spades, and depending on how the rest of the card game goes, you might get a royal flush, or you might just have a jack of spades that doesn't help you at all. Or shoots you in the head after some dude takes it from you and, you know, kills you with it. But anyway, yeah, the gun is a talisman. I want that to go away. I really do. And I'm not, you know, I know a lot of people that are anti-open carry will be like, you're talking about open carry. I was like, no, I'm talking about people that conceal carry the gun, too. The gun is a tool for a very specific problem. There are all sorts of other problems that don't require that tool at the beginning, at least.
If you watch like conceal camera footage and everything, like you'll see the guy get the gun out, he puts it forward, and then he stops and he's like, "Wait, this hasn't."
Oh, I need to shoot the guy.
Oh, wait, yes. Like, I figured I would just get this out, and then the everything
this doesn't
okay.
fix everything.
I would give the key to the city. You know, this would be wonderful.
Anyway, all right. What next?
Well, this one's actually for me from Cad Bane. The question is for Jack. Being a mammal of the larger variety, with shoulder width comparable to that of a baby rhinoceros, what type of rifle sling do you use, and how do you have it mounted on your rifle?
You're bigger than a baby rhinoceros.
Slightly. I typically buy the slings designed for squad automatic weapons and or general purpose machine guns, as they're much larger and give me more room to play with. And I put them on the front of the receiver, end of the rail area, and the end of the stock.
Wait, towards the barrel or towards the...
Towards the middle of the rifle.
Okay.
And then the end of the stock.
So
and,
like center of gravity.
Yeah.
Got it.
And that tends to be like where my hands can work all the doodads on the front of the rail and not get caught up.
Yeah.
And I can transition my shoulders if you're into that sort of thing.
Well, whether you're into it or not, sometimes you got to do it. That's like the guy that wrote The Serpent and the Rainbow. William April talks about him and how that author, it's a book about voodoo. And he's like the leading most expert on voodoo in the world. And someone asked him once, he's like, oh, do you believe in voodoo? And he's like, whether you believe in it or not, if I throw you in the ocean, you get wet. It's kind of like having to do offside drills with the rifle. Whether you do it or not, sometimes you gotta.
You don't want to be the day you have to do it is the day you're figuring out how to do it.
How's this work?
Anyway. My left shoulder. Crazy talk. From Corey Dean. What is the most important gear to help develop skill and proficiency?
I hold that thought real quick because I just thought of something really important. Boop. We just touched fingers. Boop. You know what else really messes with people when you tell them they got to do it and they've never done it before?
What?
One-handed malfunction clearances
of
a rifle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a bad day.
It's like, what? How do you want me to do this? I'm traumatized. Safe space. Triggered.
Way triggered.
Oh.
Double-handed malfunction clearances on are just horrible. I'm sorry. One-handed double malfunction clearances. Hold on. I'm sorry.
I'm like looking at both my hands. I'm like, how many hands do you have? Don't answer that. All right. Corey's question.
What is the most important gear to help develop skill and proficiency? Blue guns, timers, snap caps, or something else?
Huh. I'm thinking.
Do you want me to give my answer while you think?
No, because if it's a really good answer and then I say, yeah, that, people are going to think I'm copping. I think that they all have their place, but where I see people really fall apart is when they get any sort of time pressure put on them. And even if it's just like shooting on a timer for the first time, they start doing weird things. They start messing up their grip on the gun. You know, all of a sudden their gun that they've got 500 flawless rounds through doesn't work anymore. And it's like, what's,
web of lies.
What's going on? I'm like, you're stressed.
I
ambushed you with a timer.
Ooh.
Oh.
While I agree that timers...
But there's none of those in a gunfight.
You know, they say that, but on the camera that's filming you, there's a timer going down.
Right.
I would say blue guns.
And I could see that.
The reason why is we do thousands of things with guns that aren't shooting them,
mm-hmm.
that you get very little practice doing because it's not safe.
Mm-hmm.
And putting a blue gun in a student's hands allows me as an instructor to do some things that... If that was a live gun, touch sporty, probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But seeing how it's a blue gun, it'll let me do that, and I can do a lot of stuff that... There's other stuff than shooting that we've got to do, and that gun's got to be a part of it.
That segues into a nice... there was another question about... And you might be able to find it. The one about... how do we learn how to think and do other stuff?
Yep. Hold on one second.
I saw it. I know it's there. I've seen dry land.
I was going to save that one, but it's...
What about them Bengals? Oh, they had a tie game today because that happens in football all the time.
Coming from Free Faller. I'm not kidding.
I know. It's a fake name, I'm pretty sure.
I feel like Mo on The Simpsons sometimes.
Right?
In today's...
Harry Rogers. Who would do that to their kid?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's
not the right question anyway.
No, it is. Free Faller, in the past shows, the importance of thinking and talking with a gun has been discussed. What is the best way to practice this?
Thinking. Oh, God. No, I said tanking.
Oh, okay. Because
apparently it's one of those days.
We'll do it live.
No. Yeah, so we've been recording the show a lot lately, and I can tell.
We're a lot looser on those shows.
Right? So the trick to that is actually just going out and doing it, but the issue is that you don't want to have it be for all the marbles the first time, so... Doing stuff with a blue gun or a cert pistol where, you know, you have to make decisions in an environment where there are no consequences at first, like with a blue gun or a cert pistol, start communicating with people, start issuing verbal commands, start keeping track of things going on around you. then you step that up with like simmunitions or force on force. And then eventually you start doing stuff live fire, like shoot houses, where you've got to process a structure and keep track of the other guy in there with you, or multiple guys, if there are multiple guys, or things like that. You know, and you just slowly step it up. Go ahead.
Your first one, your first exercise, get dressed, put everything on. Don't think about it, because if you think about it, you're going to cheat. Get dressed, put everything on, take your real gun out of your holster, put a blue gun in your holster, pull that gun out, and then pretend to dial 911 on your phone and mm-hmm. tell me how that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're suddenly going to find out that you may have been doing something because it was convenient that isn't going to help you long term. And now we've got to do something different.
Well, so stuff like that. You know, you do all sorts of weird things. So there was a guy I was in class with, an advanced instructor down in Texas with Tom Givens. Was actually involved in a shooting of in January of 2015, where, and I'm not going to get into the details of it right now, but ended up having to shoot a guy that had destroyed his front door and come into his house with his family there, was threatening him. After he shot this guy, he's on the phone with 911, and he actually transferred his pistol from his right hand to his left hand and was on the phone with 911 with his right hand, and like halfway through that, he goes in his head, he's like, well, this was dumb. Why did I do it this way? But that's just, you know, one of the things that people don't think about, you know, when things like that actually happen, you know, you start doing funny things. It's like students that I have in class, you know, I can completely destroy their world just by introducing a timer or something like that. And slowly ramping the pressure up like that is really important. We got another minute in this segment. You got another question, Jack?
Let me ask this one, and then we can get into it
deeper.
From TJ Gaskell, is switching between carry guns with different triggers as detrimental as the internet would have you believe?
I think that really depends on how different the triggers are from one another and how much time you've put in with that particular system before you make the switch. We got about 20 seconds and I don't have quite enough time to really like talk about what I want to talk about with that. So when we get back from the break, we'll get into it a little bit more.
Ozzy's better.
Ooh, no, he's not. And we'll talk about that when we get back too.
Hey, guess what? Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Events, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Events, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, Aziz Light! Ever again. Doesn't matter if you are shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now is a special offer for Ballistic Radio listeners. You can get 30% off the Surefire.com web store, except for suppressors and batteries, by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS. That is ALLTHELUMENS. All the lumens, no space. Because if you put a space after, it doesn't work. Anyway, Jack! What was the... Oh, differing triggers. So here's the thing. If you've got, like, a lot of time with any of those, you might be a little rusty on them, but you've already built a base level of skill that it's pretty easy to fall back on. So, like, I can pick up a double action, single action and be pretty fine because I've got, you know, 90,000 rounds through DASA guns. I can pick up a 1911 and be pretty fine because I've got 50 or 60,000 rounds, you know, through 1911. I can pick up a 320 or a striker fired gun and be pretty okay. Whether or not other people can do that, I don't know. I'm not other people. So
you need to make the determination.
Yeah.
Like
that's on you.
Kinda. Yeah. Like if you can shoot anything, there are a couple of guys out there that can.
Well, you've seen me for a while now, just sort of
Yeah, I mean, like, generally, if I hand you a handgun, you're going to shoot it fine.
Yeah.
I've worked with other shooters who, with certain guns in their hands, were just great. And mm-hmm. if you put something else in there, it screwed them up.
Yep.
I can really only do striker fired or single action. Like, double action only or double action, single action screws me up. And I'm not that great with it.
It's because you're not that good.
Hurt somebody's kidding. Feelings once.
You're right. Your response to that should have been, hey, John, let's get in a ground fight. No.
No matter what fight it is with me, it'll be a ground fight eventually.
Right. All the bullets. So anyway, next question.
From Matt Duncan. John, what has been your most pivotal moment in your training journey thus far?
Failing.
Mm.
Every time I failed, and I've done it a lot, has been a really, really horrible, painful experience that I learned a lot from. You know, but so like going and taking ECQC and you know, getting destroyed. And I'm actually, so what's funny is like the undershirt that I'm wearing right now was the shirt that I had on at ECQC. And the reason why I keep it around is because, and I'm going to show Jack, you see the, there it is, right
yeah.
there.
Those hurt, don't they?
Yeah. Well, and what I showed him was the holes in the undershirt from where the simmunition rounds blew, like, just through the thin material, because, again, was, you know, pretty close.
In there.
Yeah. And, you know, so those would have killed me, you know, easy. That stuck with me, you know. Recently, I went and took Shoot House Instructor with John Chapman and Joey Wire up at Alliance Police Training, and I got an attendance certificate. Well, what's that? That's what you get when you don't get a completed certificate because you're 2 points under the cutoff for a completed certificate. You know, so what's that mean? Well, it means, for me at least, I failed. Now, I know a couple of my buddies tried to make me feel better and like, oh, he doesn't give some people certificates at all. I'm like, well, that's not good enough. But the thing is that when things like that happen, you can do one of two things. You can go, wow, I'm never going to put myself in a position where I'm going to fail ever again. Or, I think this is better, you can go and do better next time. Or maybe not do better next time, but at least you win. And you start building that mental fortitude where, you know, it doesn't really matter what happens. You're going to do what you need to do. And that's been what's been really, really helpful for me. And it's one of the issues that I have with people when they say, well, I need to get, you know, trained up for this class I'm going to go take, or, you know, I'm not ready to go take this class. And there's a difference between not being ready from a safety standpoint and not being ready from a skill standpoint to where you're not going to do well, but you're still going to learn. And honestly, as long as you're safe, you know, it's like if someone comes to one of the classes that I teach, I don't, you know, as long as you're safe and you're learning, I'm okay if you suck. Because there's been plenty of times where I suck, and there's plenty of places I can go right now today, and I will not be very good in those environments doing those skills. And there's all different levels of that for different people, but what you really need to do is go and find those places where you're horrible and spend time there until you're not horrible anymore. You know, that's what I think.
I'm absolutely in agreement with you. And I remember it was like my JITS coach looking at me as I'm on the ground desperately holding on to something that doesn't help me. And he was like, you got to learn to let go, man. Get back in there and find something that's going to work for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we got a couple minutes left.
Phil Henke wants to know, what's your opinion on pepper spray for everyday carry?
I think it's an amazing idea because there are plenty of problems that are not shoot problems that are still problems. And I know a lot of people say things like, well, what if you have pepper spray and you don't use it and you shoot someone? Aren't they going to hold it against you? You didn't use pepper spray first? No, not if you're, you know, able to articulate why you shot someone in the first place. So.
And Adam Smith wants to know, how do you justify and live the fact that you were incorrect in choosing Dio over Ozzy?
Well, you know, I live with that fact because you guys are wrong, and Ronnie James Dio was.
The first step is admitting you have a problem.
So here's the thing. the question is whether or not Ronnie James Dio was a better singer than Ozzy. And there's no question there. He was a better singer than Ozzy. Now, if you wanted to have a conversation about whether or not he was a better performer than Ozzy, that's a separate conversation. And I really want to use the analogy I used in the, I think it was In the Car or something like that, but I don't want to start like some beef, you know, on the show between two trainers because I threw an analogy at him. But read the LA Times article I posted about it, man, because that really explains my thoughts.
I'm sure you and the other music hipsters feel great about this.
Well, I actually was a musician for a while, so. Anyway, here, give me another question, jerk face.
You took my one for the end. Hold on.
Well, it wasn't the end yet, so I don't know why you asked it.
You asked me to.
Well, I didn't ask you.
Sam Winters asks, in today's age, I find myself caring more and more to defend myself against active shooters. What are some things I should consider in my daily life for this?
Can you make a low percentage shot static on the range? And if so, at what distance can you do that? And once you figure that out, start thinking about whether or not it's realistic to expect to make that shot in a crowd and adjust tactics accordingly. I see a lot of people, and I used to be one of them, say things like, oh, I can make headshots at 25 yards. Can I do that? Yes. Can I do that in a mall under rifle fire with people running around? I don't know. I hope I never find out. But it sure motivates me to get better so that it's a more definitive yes if I ask myself that question. The other thing, too, is does my gear support that? You know, I'll give you, for instance, I'm carrying a single stack 1911 chambered in 45 right now. So I've got 9 rounds in the gun, which even though I know from a statistical standpoint is more than enough to get me through almost anything that I'm likely to encounter. I've also got 3 10-round magazines with me, just in case, even though I know a reload is not something that happens in a civilian context ever. So, it's kind of, you know, it depends. But, boy, do you, boo. Whatever makes you happy.
You do you, boo.
Right? Hey! Thanks for listening, guys. As always, make sure you check out our website, BallisticRadio.com. Like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. And keep leaving those 5-star reviews on iTunes. We appreciate it. It really helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.